Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Kubo. Today, I have me a very special guest, Ray Jameson. Ray, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm having a good time and happy to be on your show.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're here. These are the things that people don't see, right? Like, we've had three scheduled, and my son and then my oral surgery did not have that in the cards. So I'm always like, I just want to get everybody on that I want to get on and chat with everybody. I want to chat with everybody. I want to chat things about. So I'm so happy that we could get it figured out today. It's ironic for our viewers that are listening or watching because there's actually a snowstorm on its way. I'm about an hour and a half ahead of it. So Ray and I are going to get this in and have a good time. And it's just in time. But it's like, man, the universe is like trying to keep us from talking about some cool stuff. So.
What state are you in for the
I'm
snow?
actually in central New York. I'm like right
Okay.
outside of Ithaca, where like Cornell University is. So yeah, that like whatever was coming from like North Dakota just like kind of came over the Great Lakes and is coming back this way, I guess, this week. So it's
I'm in
been.
Winnipeg, just
Oh, okay.
north of North Dakota, and we seem to have just missed it, but apparently we're getting
Oh,
some
okay.
later this week.
Oh, gotcha. Well, I'm glad that we could, the weather could chill a little bit, for now and get it figured out. But yeah, I'm so glad to have you on. Once I saw your guys' Kickstarter, I was like, oh, I gotta talk to, somebody on this Kickstarter and, this project. I just thought it looked really awesome. I absolutely love the art. I like fell in love with the art like right off the bat. I just want our audience to know before we get started asking Ray questions, I will be having a video that will be a review of issue one for Madcaps that's going to come out. This will be Saturday, February 15th. So it'll actually be out this Thursday. So please make sure you check that out. That'll be 12 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And again, this is going to be coming out on Thursday, February 20th. So I'll be talking about the issue. I'll show just the cover and some things. So please make sure you guys check that out after you guys have listened or watched this interview because I thought it was awesome. I think you guys will too. But Ray, we'll get right in really to that first question there. And what is your project Madcaps about, and how did this idea come about?
So this project came together over a long course of time. So I've played in the last just over a decade. I've played a lot of tabletop RPG, in specific Dungeons and Dragons. And the reason I started is because I moved across country and I needed an excuse to hang out with my friends. So we did it via webcam and I was the dungeon master. And unlike your standard D&D modules, I did homebrew. In other words, all of the lore, the history, the cities is all under my own creation. And after about a decade of this, I've loved comics since before I can remember. And I decided, what did I wanted to express these stories through a different medium. So I started contacting talent through social media, and eventually you start getting some names. I'm kind of beside myself at some of the people, even now after issue one is done, to look back and think, I got that guy on my squad. I can't believe I did that. And the story itself, it's medieval fantasy, of course. It takes place, all three issues, mini series, over the course of one night, and it's solely just about the reunion of four friends getting interrupted by an undead outbreak, which appears to have some correlation with a local drug problem. So if you were to imagine an adult version of Scooby-Doo Mysteries minus the dog and some cool quirks amongst the characters, that would give you a good ballpark of what you're getting yourself into.
That's awesome. That's a good way to put it. I think I saw you advertise that somewhere in that manner, and I was like, that's definitely like my kind of thing. So that's just awesome. I love anytime somebody thinks about telling a story like this in this type of medium. I think that there's just a lot more you can do with it. I have switched because I was supposed to do a graphic novel with a guy before the pandemic in my local area, and then the pandemic happened, and him and my projects like went way sideways. But I had one story that now I've turned into a novel. But part of me still really, 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 really wants to, one day see it as a graphic novel just to be able to see, the different mediums. And now I've met a lot of artists where I'm like, oh my God, I'm like this thing has to be, put down into this medium at some point. So that's why your
I get you.
Kickstarter, I think, in particular, like really interested me. So I was like, oh, this is super neat. But that sounds awesome. In terms of the role that, you play in the writing process of Madcaps, can you talk about that, or, what your role has been, just in general with the Kickstarter? That would be awesome.
Yeah, so basically once I had the story written and I found my interior artist first. So when I was a kid, I liked drawing comics. It wasn't something I could ever chase as a profession. So because of that, I was never able to like strengthen those passions of mine. However, when I was a kid, I took a comic course and I understood all of the dynamics attached to creating such a book. So from pencils to inks to lettering to panels to story structure to dynamic covers and so forth and so on. So my plan was having the script done and then finding an interior artist. I found Evan Quiring, shout out to Evan, who's also a Winnipegger like myself. You can find some of his own stuff, Murder City Devil and Lucha Mysteries. And once I had that done, I looked for a colorist. The colorist would be the next logical choice. I found Dan Kemp, and to my surprise, he said yes. And anybody who doesn't know who Dan Kemp is, he's colored over 100 issues of Spawn, Amazing Spider-Man around that Civil War era, early Marvel Knights Daredevil, and I mean the list goes on. If anybody's ever seen the Ben Affleck Daredevil, which many people do not like. The ending scene that brings up the credits, you see him jump off the end and he throws his baton up and all of the cord squiggles up. That is an homage to Marvel Knights Daredevil number one. And the fellow that colored my comic colored that imagery. So it's just really cool to for him to say yes, and oh my goodness. So we're gonna have some really nice additions to an already cool setup with Evan Quiring's work. After that, I needed cover artists, and I'm really happy with the different ones I have. And eventually, Micah Myers is my letterer. As I was putting this book together, I have a day job, so this isn't something I could invest all of my attention into. So there's certain things I could, the scripting, for example, and reaching out and establishing these artists and communicating my end product and finding that end product through them. But one thing I can't really do is distribution. So I found a publisher, Philbo Russert, or sorry, Philip Russert of Philbo Publishing. Shout out to him. I'm very, very satisfied with how he's been helping me out. He ran my Kickstarter for me, obviously for fee, and he goes to different cons, so he'll be taking my book with him. And overall, just a really happy experience altogether.
Oh, that's super cool. That's awesome. And this is why I think it's really important to get people like yourself, right, who are in this type of industry or have these type of Kickstarters projects, and products, because I think it really makes people think a little differently about not just their overall, products, but Kickstarter, but just I think really kicks around different ideas for people. So that's why I always like to try and bring people from different mediums, on here. People are like, why you interview directors? I'm like, or actors or
Why
voice
not?
actors. Yeah, I'm like, it's kind of cool, like I have a lot of different people where, they've messaged me like, oh, that was actually really interesting. I never thought I could, listen to Ray and, pick something up for my own project. And I think it's a natural cultural diffusion. So I think that it's awesome that you're able to connect with so many cool people. I have to say, when you first sent me, like what the project was, and I'm like looking at people, I'm like, holy moly, like you guys have like a really stacked crew. And it really like piqued my interest, not only, because of the product itself. Like that was the first thing. I love the first image you sent me. I was like sold to like, I don't even need to look it up. But then I was doing my homework for the questions. I was like, hey, there's a lot of really interesting people. And then I went down the rabbit hole of, seeing the things they worked on. I was just like, dang, this is gonna be a really cool project. But I'm kind of curious, just real quick, just to kind of talk about the DM experience a little bit. I'm kind of curious at to what degree did your guys's like campaign or your role as a dungeon master really play in your ability to to write this script? I'm just curious because I did something similar with a novel recently, so.
Yeah, I get you. So, like I was saying before, I had about just over a decade worth of lore and world building with my players, and they had a lot of shape on history. If I recall anything that happened during that decade, it's the equivalent of watching like a favorite TV show. If you watch something, a brand new episode, and hey, that ties really good with season two, episode four, the recollection is more memory as opposed to I made it up in my mind. So for me to transfer that to a story, the only thing that I really changed was the characters I took out that were played by the players, and I injected my own in. So in regards to the
Cool.
history and everything that was going on and all of the events, it already happened. It was just through the lenses of a couple of new injected characters.
Oh,
So there
that's
was a bit
cool.
of a combination of two things where I was more or less reporting fictional news and then adding to it as well. That's the
That's
best way
cool.
to put it.
Oh, that's really cool. I just think it's funny, and I think it's interesting to point out because you and I kind of did like different things, same thing, but different sides. I actually took my characters that three of my friends and I played in a campaign. I liked the setting. I was like, oh, dark fantasy was good. And we're still in like a dark wood, but a lot of the things that happened to us, I was like, no, I just kind of want the characters. And the characters for me, at least for the story, were a little bit different. I actually put them in a whole separate world. So it's funny how we did two opposite things, but came up with,
That's
a story.
interesting.
So, but I think that's what's always cool about talking to, different people. I think it's good for our audience to see too, because we have a lot of, people that are just starting out with projects, or maybe they have, a couple books out, or something like that. But I think it's always good for people to see that, you and I can both do something completely different and come up with a really cool product. But it's funny that we were kind of similar with the game background, but took like two different things. And started with those. So I always find that like super, super interesting. But thank you for answering that question. That's super cool. Kind of gives me some different ideas going the other way next time for a couple stories. But that just sounds really awesome. So this is always my favorite thing, is just really, to dive in and talk to people about their storylines in particular. So what is the storyline for Madcaps about, and how did you decide where to start for this first issue?
So the Madcaps, this is my first time writing a comic, and because of that, I wanted just a short story, in this case, 3 issues long. I don't have the audacity to claim the first thing I ever professionally release to the public is going to be ongoing monthly and the most popular thing ever. So really, this was just a of all of the things that I did in tabletop gaming, I wanted a short story that could just be expressed and out of my system. So the easiest way, I picked one story out of all of that lore. And again, I wanted this to be like a one-shot D&D campaign, beginning,
Oh, that's
middle,
cool.
end. All 3 issues are like different acts, but they more or less could stand alone in regards to action and entertainment and concept. But basically, my thing was, I'm doing this for the first time. I'm going to start small, and I'm not releasing it to the public unless I feel it's worthy of the industry. Regardless of whether it's the best or the worst book, I wanted to make sure that I had an acceptable amount of talent, be it my letterer or my cover artist or interiors or colors, the works. And when I got to that point, okay, so I have an end game. So when it's released, it's done. If I did the opposite, where it was like multiple issues and it ended up not being that well and I had to cancel, I think that would be more I just don't think that would be a good result for anybody. I'd hate for people to really like it 3 issues in and cancel. I wanted to just have a really good statement of a short story, and that's that.
It's never happened to me, has it? I'm like staring at a couple of comic book companies right now. So one, I want to thank you, Titan, for taking over a couple of comics that I absolutely love and not doing that and doing them justice. So I totally feel that. I'm like, oh, I've had some where I'm like, I was literally praying to the universe. I was like, Crom, never mind. I guess that's too much. But I was like, please take this character and give him to somebody else, right? So they can do him justice. So thank God Titan has Conan now, because I was so tired of it. I'd go down there And I love the run, amazing artists. And then like, oh, we only sold like, a few issues out of these three. And then I'd go down for the fourth, fifth, or sixth. They're like, oh, nope, done. That happened to me like six or seven runs in a row.
Yeah, it's
And then I
frustrating.
found out Titan bought them, and then they just like flooded it with talent. And it's just been like they brought back the Savage Sword of Conan, like the bigger issue magazines. I'm just like, it's just been awesome. The guys at the comic store was like, what do you want? I was like, anything with Conan on it and Titan, like just give it to me. Because I've been so long, right? Where there was just such a crazy gap. Like you couldn't find anything other than, four out of four issue, short series stuff. And it's a shame because now, and I'm glad Titan did that because they've just done a much better job. So I totally feel you when you were saying that. I think that's a really smart idea. It's ironic because you said this about yourself. You're a little shorter with this medium, and that's like for me for my novellas. Some people are, people ask me like, first of all, it's cheaper for me to release novellas right now. It's easier for me time wise with my young son and stuff. But I too, I'm like, I just picked a different medium, to get some stuff out there, so it's a little shorter. So I have like three prequel novellas, so I totally feel you on that run too. I'm like trying to provide the best product possible, but I'm kind of using it as a learning experience, for some of these different mediums. So I totally feel you on there. And I just always like to point that out to people because I think that's really smart what you did. And I think it's a much more manageable task. And I love that you were saying, like it's three issues, it's a D&D one shot. Like that's just awesome. Like what a great way to advertise, something like this story. So I think that's really, really cool and really, really smart on your part. So I definitely want to point that out for the audience. So can you tell us a little bit more about the characters that you have chosen for this series and, why you chose them particularly for this tale?
So for this tale, the character is actually based off of the original players who played their own characters. So remember I said before I took the characters out and injected new characters. The characters are based off of those original players.
Well, that's really
So
cool.
I drew a lot of inspiration from them. So I was able to play up their strengths, play up their weaknesses. I'm not a fan of infallible supermen, and that's no slight at Kal-El or anything like that, but I'm not. I think it'd be boring if my guys were invincible. So you've read the first issue. They're within, I think, in the first half of the issue, three of them almost get killed, and they're saved by guards. And I said this on another podcast not too long ago. Getting saved by guards in D&D is the equivalent of like Captain Kirk getting saved by red shirts. I wanted to really point out that these guys could die. I wanted to have gravity, and all obviously I can't dive deeply into issue two and three. They haven't come out yet, but this takes place over one night. You can only like carry heavy things for so long. You can only run so long or so far and so long. You got to get tuckered out. So, Madrakis, for example, the long, the red-caped, lizard-like looking individual. One thing he can do is, well, basically, he's a descendant from a giant kaiju-like electric eel that lives out in the ocean called the Great Stormworm. And one thing he inherited through his lineage is he can vomit out lightning, which he stores in his gizzard. Now, with that said, really cool, really awesome, but it's limited, just like a skunk and its defense mechanism. It can't do that all the time, or a snake with venom. And he's the same thing. So you see him use that up, and then he almost gets killed because that was his big walloping haymaker. It's like in D&D when you use up a spell slot, now you have to rely on your cantrips if you're a spellcaster. Another cool thing about Madrakis is although he's got that cool blade and that cool armor, it's all ceremonious. Or ceremonial, I should say. He doesn't know much about his people. The little he does, he tries to reflect it. So the armor and the blade, he's not a fighter, although he's a an impressive specimen at over 6.5 feet tall, over 350 pounds. But with that said, he can swing a blade really darn hard, but that doesn't make him a skilled fighter. The most impressive thing about him in specific is actually his intelligence, and he would be considered an amateur mage or a wizard to be. He just hasn't had the opportunity to hone those skills. One of the things you see in the first issue is he, as you already know, he catches an undead individual by the throat, sets its head on fire. just to give you an inkling that he knows some type of magic, but you don't see him really rely on it. You're not really sure how well skilled or how deep his ability in the arcane is. You know it's there, but that's about as far as it goes. Another individual that many people like a lot is Chasgo, who's a blue-skinned elf. He is an uncommon form of elf known as an Augur. Augurs, they live in a mountain range that is predominantly riddled with silver deposits. And in real life, you can see this with human beings. If they consume a lot of silver, it actually tattoos their skin blue. One guy was on Oprah. You could probably look up, if you type in on YouTube, I'm sure Oprah blue skinned man, he'll show up. He literally looks like a Smurf, like a Papa Smurf, complete with a white
Oh,
beard
that's
and stuff.
interesting.
It looks fake. It looks like a really good makeup job right in under the hair and everything, but it's a legit thing. But anyways, Chasgo, his blue skin is a similar effect, but because it's fantasy, all of that silver in his veins gives him some resistances to magic.
Oh, that's cool.
His people are very, would be viewed as what you would call xenophobic. They want nothing to do with outsiders, but they're very primitive. And they're kind of violent towards anything not of their own kind. Chasgo viewed his people as kind of dysfunctional. He wanted really nothing to do with them. Eventually, he was approached by a being called going by the name of Annette, and she was able to grant him magical gifts. She was able to actually negate the silver in his veins and actually have him be a spellcaster. Another cool thing about Augurs. They literally worship the mountain and they view magic as like an abomination. And they in their belief system, they believe the worship of the mountain is what makes them so resistant to magic. But in reality, it's just the silver flowing through them.
That's
So
cool.
Chasgo is in a very difficult position because he wants to leave and he has these abilities. If he stays, he's doing abominable things. If he leaves, people that look at him, it's an Augur, kill it. It's going to cause some trouble. One of the magical gifts that Annette gave him was the ability to conceal his appearance. So he looks like a human. And living in Ivywood, he ascended ranks and he's become the representative of a noble. And one of his end games is to get the higher ups to accept him comfortable enough that he can actually reveal who he is and find a means of other Augurs to leave that mountain range. He's got lots of cool stuff coming up. I already shared that black and white image of you, which is a variant cover of issue two. He actually is a pet. It's a three-eyed albino crow. And there's more to talk about that pet, but I'm really excited to talk about him. The other two, the leftover leather two left rather, there's Sarlacc. He is a full-blooded dwarf. His people, his specific type of dwarf, they left a mountain, a mine essentially, and they wanted to just farm on mainland. So, being as dwarves are stereotypically stubborn, they started to farm in a swampland area, and over time, through hard labor, terraform it to fertile lands that you could actually grow crops on. Because of this, in the middle of the swamp, culturally, they have grown to identify, track down, and pacify things that go bump in the night, things you would find in a swamp, essentially. He ended up moving to Ivywood, which is predominantly human and orc, and he felt impressed to show more devotion to a deity he refers to as the divine. He erected a church in Ivywood and decided that he wanted to reflect his deity's teachings. He wanted to speak with his hands. He wanted to help those less fortunate. He's not there to thump his beliefs on anybody. So with that said, he's kind of an interesting individual because he's used to hunting down and slaying monsters, and occasionally he will leave the city to do that if it's a problem. Caravan's gone missing, and he hears that would be the type of thing for him to go and investigate. He would be most likely to isolate what a problem is, but he is a person of peace. And personality-wise, the best way to describe him would be a long fuse to a large cannon is a good way to put it. And then there's the last guy who's Dunan Eni, a dwarven father and sorry, he's the product of a dwarven father and a gnomish mother. So a little bit shorter than your average dwarf, and he doesn't grow a beard. He draws from both bloodlines, but he has a hard time fitting in with either culture. And because of this, any bond he would have to a close friend would be just as strong as it would be to a family member. The inside cover to issue one, there's actually a passage of him talking to his father, just explaining why he's wanting to meet up with his friends. The whole first issue, or sorry, the premise of the first issue is done in trying to get the other three back together for employment opportunity. And that first passage is him just explaining to his dad why he would do these things for a non-dwarf. And one odd byproduct he's discovered with himself is he's able to magically manipulate metals and crystalline structures, which includes jewels and glass, but also like copper, iron, and various other things to an extent. And one of his coolest things is a contraption which comes up over his shoulder. It can blast raw arcana out of it. It's rigged to do that. He's not exactly sure why he has these abilities, but his tentative conclusion right now is his gnomish mother, who has magical influence on nature, somehow that mixed with his father's dwarven blood to make him as the end product. Somehow it's a variant of those two things which gives him said control over these things. That's the long and short of all four of them, and I could go into a lot more depth, but at the end of the day, I think it's just more exciting to go in there and start reading and picking up on
Oh,
all of
yeah.
these characters and what they have to bring to the table.
I was gonna say, Sarlacc was my favorite. I ended up like,
Yeah.
I was just like, I love dwarves, so I liked him a lot. So I actually ended up taking a writing break from doing a different short story. And then I ended up coming up with like a whole series of like for like these dwarves on one of my, I actually ended up just like changing a whole bunch of stuff for my secondary fantasy world, and I was like, I added a bunch of dwarves to it.
Nice.
Yeah, just because of him. And I had a particular character that he kind of reminded me of that was kind of talking to me, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. I was like, you can be the main character of like this series. But it was like particularly because of Sarlacc, so I thought that was
Cool.
really
Thanks,
cool.
man.
So yeah, it was really awesome. So when I one of these days when I could finish that one off, I'll send it to you. But yeah, like I came up with like their whole society. Yeah, I like read that, and then like with that character, I had like several dwarves that just all found me at the same time. There was like three different stories and characters. You just got into that, like Sarlacc was one of them, so that was really cool. But yeah, I was just like, oh, I gotta do a dwarf thing now, and I just spent like 2 weeks straight. My buddy's like, what are you doing? I'm like, this was really cool. I was like, I just read three
Because
great
dwarves,
dwarves, you know?
that's
Yeah,
why.
because dwarves, I know, right? Yeah, like the video game was great, you know. So I was like, yeah, why question me? And then Rings of Power season one had come out, and I was just like, oh, and I had to do a dwarf thing. But yeah, Sarlacc,
Dwarves for days.
yeah, he was one of the ones that started spinning that wheel for me. So it was really cool. So I'm excited for
Right
people
on.
to check that out. But yeah, I love that variant cover. So at some point, I'm gonna have to check that one out.
Oh, now, do you know
Finish
who drew that variant cover of Sarlacc? That is
that.
done by illustrator Javier Celtares. He drew
Oh.
the first year of Ghost Rider from 1990, where Dan Ketch took
Ooh.
over as the writer. Now, Johnny Blaze being the
What?
original Ghost Rider, nobody ever thinks of that imagery of Ghost Rider. When people think of Ghost Rider, it's the imagery of Dan Ketch. The fellow that drew Sarlacc was actually one of the individuals that had direct influence on that Ghost Rider look. So when you see the two movies, regardless of whether they're good or not, but Nicolas Cage playing Johnny Blaze, they made him look like Dan Ketch's Ghost Rider. So basically, when you watch those movies, the guy that had one of the main influences on that look is the guy that drew that cover that you like.
Oh, that's really cool. No, that's awesome. I say I have some of those from that time, so that was some of my favorite Ghost Riders, so that's really
Yeah,
cool.
yeah.
Yeah, that's really awesome. But even like the main cover, like the first one you sent me, I still think Sarlacc's my favorite on there. It was hard for me to pick, but yeah, once I get into it, I'm like, oh, this is my thing.
Yeah,
But that's really
that's done
cool.
by Jimbo Salgado,
Oh,
and
so cool.
he's drawn a bunch of stuff, Batman Unhinged and like various other things.
Oh yeah, it's really neat. I'm like moving things around in my basement, and we're like repainting this winter. So I had to like fix a wall. So my wife's like, "Oh, you can finally like get all your art up." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm looking to have more." So that was one of the covers. I was like, every time I see it, it gives me an idea. And I just, yeah, I want to be surrounded by that stuff in my writing cave because it's like that's where, I'm trying to get more things going. So, but yeah, that's definitely one of those covers where I'm like, oh, that's super cool. But that's all really awesome, I think, to know. I liked the characters right off the bat after I saw the cover, and then once I started checking out the Kickstarter, I'm like, oh, this is really neat. And then, actually diving into issue one, I highly recommend people in our audience, if you're, if you're a fantasy fan or you're just a comic fan, like, check it out. You're gonna have to buy issue two and three, I guarantee it. But yeah, definitely at least check out the cover, and everything for issue one in the description. You will not be disappointed. Ray, you're definitely on the right podcast. Let me just say it that much. So
Thanks, man.
I
Right
think
on.
that's really
Appreciate it.
cool. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but I always love talking to people about the overall story and, just the characters in general. But yeah, these were some ones that I really want to make sure our audience, were able to check out. I've had a lot of people message me privately about, like, how do I take my DM experience or how I take my player experience, for whether it's D&D or Starfinder or something like that, or even some video game experience, right? And then be able to, to translate that. So I always think it's cool, when we can come up with some great representations of that, particularly different mediums. So that's really awesome. But yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about, the world building in general? And I'm just curious that, like, you took the world, but were there particular things that you tried to focus on, for this story? Or I'm just kind of curious, like, how you kind of decided in that world, because I assume over these 10 years, right, that there's a lot of things you could pick from. So I'm kind of curious at why you chose like this location, this storyline in terms of like the world building, like what really went into creating this story?
So, the first thing I picked was exact a specific storyline. I picked the one that I felt would fit nicely in three issues. And after that, everything else comes together. Well, that story involves this city. And
Oh, that makes sense.
one thing I really, really wanted to do, I'm not sure if I said this yet, I wanted to make sure that the story, all of the world before the story, it felt like it existed before the story started and exists after. For example, in the first couple of pages, Madrakis and Dunnan coming into Ivywood to meet up with Sarlacc and Chasgo. Dunnan's saying to Madrakis, "I'm glad you joined me. This, I think it'll be easier to convince the others to come along." And Madrakis just says, "I'd rather be somewhere else with my nose in a book." And I wanted to make sure that there was enough stated. If you were dropped in a random circle of friends that you've never met before, and you were dropped into their lives and watched them interact, it's almost like you would have to know insider baseball to understand all the context of what's going on. The opposite of this would be what I call lazy writing, where somebody walks up to the other and says, "How are you doing today, uncle?" Well, nobody calls their uncle uncle. It's just a way of getting the reader to know right away. I feel it's kind of lazy, but I wanted people to have some type of not quite insider baseball, but not, I didn't want to patronize the reader either. I wanted to them to get a rough idea of their lives leading up to that point, but not have full of the details. And then the story starts there. You want to know those details moving forward. And yeah, something like Madrakis, when they have to report their names before they enter the city, as soon as Madrakis says his name and he says it with a sigh, the guards are ready to confront him. And all he says is, "Ivywood's charges against me were dropped." And he's let in the city. Anybody reading that, like, what the hell happened to him? Like, okay, well, this is interesting. I can't say anything by the end of book three without spoiling anything, but any time a character is introduced, you have a rough idea of what's going on, but I don't lay it all out for the reader because I feel when they know a little bit less at the start, it feels more natural. And again, I wanted to avoid patronizing the reader.
I think that makes total sense. This just happened the other day with something where I was like, I get recaps, but when you have a seven, whatever, seven, eight, or beyond that book series, right? And you recap every single thing that's happened from book one, you know what I mean? Like, even if it's in 2 pages, I'm just like, oh my God. I'm like, go read the previous book, I'm just gonna say it. David Eddings did it in every single book, and it was like it was not 2 pages, right? I skipped those parts. I'm like, I read them all within 9 days of each other. Like, I didn't need to recap. But I felt
Right.
like that was like one of those things that was pushed on us. In the past, like around our like before, during, and after our generation, right? Where it was just like that's just what storytelling, was like. People felt like that was something that was needed, and you're just like, oh my God. So I totally get that. I actually like being like, when you say that, like, ooh, what did he do? And then it kind of piques my interest more, especially if there's not exposition right there, right? Because that happened to me today with somebody. Like, I was talking to somebody and I was like, oh, I didn't know that about them. Did somebody come up to me like, oh yeah, like this is the backstory? Like, no, like it's still in my mind. And at some point we'll discuss it, or something will happen, and I'll learn more about that story for them. And I think that is, like you're saying, that more natural way, to tell a story or to get people to learn about these characters. But I think that's really cool. I just hate when people info dump. I hate when I info dump when I'm writing,
Well,
that kind of thing.
another cool thing, if done right, and the reader doesn't fully understand leading up to the point where you want them to understand, all the things before that that aren't completely explained, they're going to remember that. It's an
Yeah,
easier
true.
way to get somebody to process a story to the level you want them to. And I really believe in that. I saw, this is going back maybe 10 years, there was a fella on YouTube. He explained why Mega Man X is the best game ever, the original. And he goes on of saying it doesn't play out how to play the game. It makes you figure it out in such a way where it feels natural. And I feel that way with storytelling. Don't lay it out. Have people just experience their way into it. And the any questions they have, I'm sure eventually will be explained.
I think that makes total sense. I've been working on my fifth draft, doing that very thing. To some degree, I've been struggling with, my developmental editor did a great job going through. She's like, I feel like I'm like the story took place with these, like you and I are in like the front seat of a bus, right? She's like, but then we're like in the seat behind, and then we're listening to these two tell the story that happened to them. She's like, I want to be in that seat, being one of those two characters. And I was like, oh, that's such a good way to put that. So I think about that a lot, with different mediums. And I think that's what's great about comics in particular, though, right? In this type of medium where it does put you in it right away. And I do think that it is helpful to have, a way to visually tell a story as well as write a story, because I think it is a way for you to bring it in. But I gotta say, over the last like 10 years, like 12 years in particular, I've seen so many people do a better job of what you're saying, like in terms of graphic novels, in terms of, letting us figure it out, right? And I've just seen, I have so many at my house that just do a much better job of telling a story just in general, and really using that visual medium to help. I think some people before that maybe relied a little bit too much on the visual, and then the writing suffered a little bit at times. But I've just seen so many, the good people did it well, but everybody else kind of like, hit or miss. And I think
Yeah,
that's what
there's a
some
hard way
comics
of
is
doing
about.
the whole show don't tell. And an extreme of that, which arguably worked well for that specific movie, is Castaway with Tom Hanks. Because it's just him, a lot of the things he has to just you just have to see him go through it. There's not a lot of room for dialogue. But yeah, there's a lot of cases where maybe there's room for more dialogue and that tough balance of going the other way of, oh, you know what? Shut up a little bit. Let the story play out in some cases too.
No, totally. There's like a panel I'm thinking of. I had like a six issue. It was almost like a Shang-Chi like retelling, I think. Like, I don't know, like I think someone had that idea from a small series that I had. I'm so happy when they did the character justice. But then there was another artist and writing team that did a similar style where, like they're the son of a assassin master's guild or whatever. And it was all this ninja stuff, but it was so cool. But it was so expertly done with how they told the story. I still remember like a bunch of panels right in a row where it was like there was so much story that was told with the few words. But they had a great way of, balancing that medium. And it still stuck with me. I still have all six issues. I have all my comics, but that's one in particular. I was like, oh, I really like this, Can't tell you who the writer and artist was. I'd have to look it up, but it's still stuck with me to this day, where I always think like if I was to do this medium, I would really want, to do that style. And when somebody does it well, I'm like, oh, it reminds me of that story, and how they told the story. And I thought they did a really good job. But I think that's really a great point that you make, and though I think that makes total sense. So how did you guys decide particularly on like this is like more of the comic aspect, right? And the imaging. But how did you guys decide on how the art, coloring, and text would look like within the physical project itself? I know a lot of people are thinking about doing this, but I think they fear that lack of experience for themselves. So I think it's good you got a good team. So I'm just curious about that for our audience.
So that was a concern of mine going into it, because this is my first time on the creative side. I wanted to make sure I had good cohesion between myself and the interior artist in specific, because he was not just drawing pictures, he was also drawing story, where people on the cover, they've got a bit more more liberties, we'll put it that way.
That's great.
And I guess what I did is I wrote out the script, I described the panels and the dialogue, and then the I wanted to make sure I was thorough enough in description, but I didn't want to come across as controlling either. So I did two things. The first thing was I drew out every page how I thought it could look with a stick man format, just very basic. I did it on a whiteboard and took pictures of it and attached it in the script. But then on the flip side, I disclaimed myself and I said to Evan Quiring in this case, I said, I trust your judgment. If you think something is going to look better from a different perspective, or two panels will look better than one, go for it. I want to see what you have, and we'll go from there. And between those two dynamics, I was happy with the end product. That was I found that to be for a first time, I felt that worked out very well.
Well, that's cool. I think that's a really good like example of what I've talked to several people about, when they really want to do a project like this. But like you said, first time doing it, it could be pretty overwhelming, right? So, but I think that makes total sense with how you approach it. So I think that's some really good advice. So.
In my experience, especially with artists and expression, you obviously have to have some creative constraints. Too many could kill the artist's flair and their talent. I'll give you one example. We mentioned the Sarlacc cover with Javier Salteras drawing it. Originally, I wanted him to feel. I wanted the image to look like. I wanted Sarlacc to be in the middle of something of danger, but I wanted him to have a calm composure. And I was thinking the type of calm composure would be similar to that of a quarterback right in the middle of all the chaos while a play is going down and he's about to get sacked by like three people. And he's just milking that last second before he throws that ball. And what, my description originally of that cover is, you know what, maybe two or three skeletons, or maybe zombies or something, jumping about to land on his back while he's swinging his axe and knocking two or three away from him ahead of him while he's swinging his great axe. He sketches what you see, which is not what I asked for. And I liked it so much, I just instinctively, I said this as a joke, I said, shut up and take my money. Like that's that, it's the same thing. It's just a different result. He wanted that calm composure. Most people, if they slew a giant monster like that, they would be breathing heavy and distraught, and I almost died. Where he seems like this is just a Tuesday. So I got the same thing, but I gave him enough liberties that he was able to express what I wanted.
It's super, super cool. I think that was a great process to go through. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I always talk to Felix Ortiz about this, like privately or in personal comments on Facebook or something. And like he said in a couple of interviews, he stated quite a few times that like he like early on, and he's a great, he's like amazing, right? Like early on, he's like, oh yeah, I'll take this or that, or I'll read something, you know, in the book or whatever. But now he's to the point where he's just like, I don't want a lot of notes. I do like to give my artist Caleb, you know, like notes, but for my podcast logo, for instance, I was like, I want this, 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 and this. However you throw it together is whatever. And I just could not believe. I was like, I want a magic sword, you know, glowing blue, and then I want like with flame, blue flame. I really want like an old school, you know, like ray gun, black shirt, looking like my face with this circle in the background. And like in my head, never in my million years would I would have thought this is what he would have came with. And now he's doing my logo for my Monster Hunter series, and he was like this and that. I'm like, I want it to look like chipped stone, like it's, you know, weathered. You know, and I want just the logo. I want it to be like a snarling wolf, kind of like The Witcher, but like coming out of like a shield crest. And I was like, I don't want to be able to see the bottom, like that. But that's all I said, right? And I'm so excited. He's like, I'll have something by like this weekend, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait because I'm so used to him just taking whatever my basic idea is. And we've come a long way since I gave him notes for my first one, like art that he did. But I mean, now I'm just like, no, I'll just give him a few things and he'll just run with it. And just, he's just better at it than me, you know, which is totally fine,
Yeah, I
which is
get
why
you.
you pick a good team, right? Which I think is smart advice on your part. But yeah, I think that's super cool. I'm gonna have to get that cover though at some point, because
Thanks,
I
man.
absolutely love Sarlacc on there. I think that was just a brilliant move. I love the face that he is making when he's like staring at his head. That's just awesome. If you are curious at what I'm saying, check the description, guys, and the link's right there. So,
That cover, I have the original inkwork hanging up in my
oh,
house.
that's so cool. That's
Yeah,
awesome.
all anything that was traditionally done, so the Jimbo cover, the main one, Sarlacc, and why can't the Madrakis cover,
That's another cool.
that one is hand painted, that's not digital,
Oh, wow.
and that's done by a guy named John Zalesnik. John Zalesnik, he's been around, he's been in the game for a long time. To give you context, if you've ever played the original NES, there's a game called Shinobi. He
Oh,
painted the
yeah.
cover art. The cover art for the cartridge is his painting.
Oh, that's cool.
And he's been like Magic the Gathering, Warhammer, and various other things. But this guy's been in the game for a while. So that Madrakas cover, hand painted, man, and it speaks for itself. That guy's been doing this for a
Wow.
while.
Wow, that's astounding. That's a really good hand-painted cover. That's
Yes.
amazing. That's super cool. Well, that's really neat to know. Again, like I said, audience, you know, check out the description. I have it here for you that way you can check out the different covers. But yeah, super, super cool. Before I forget to ask you though, Ray, in terms of when you guys do issue two, are you guys opening it back up, you know, for some of these the previous issues at all? For any of the physical copies or anything like that, as like higher level
Yes.
rewards or anything, or okay, cool.
Yeah, so by the time this releases, there will be some information that is public. And I have to do the math here.
It's fine.
January, February, March, April. How many months to April 1st? January, that's 12 weeks.
Yep.
And then January, February, March. You know what? I'm going to say it now, and in case it's not public by the time you launch it, it will be, and it will be exclusive on your end. First and foremost, like you were already asking, I should cover that first. When we launch for issue two, you will be able to buy issue one, and
Okay.
we'll have a combo where you can buy both. There's digital. We're still considering all the add-ons. There were some that worked out very well for add-ons, which I'm going to do again. There's some we either want to rework or remove altogether and bring in something else. But anyways, the cool announcement, which you can't tell anybody until this video releases, is I've landed some really cool artists for the cover art, and one of them, the one I showed you already, which is already public, is by Jay Sloan. It's going to be covered by Dan Kemp. As of me talking about this right now, still in 2024, it's not colored, but by the time this is released, it should be done. But I scored a big name. The last, oh, why can't I say words? This man has been with Image Comics, working for Image Comics as early as 1992. He is not one of the founders, so I couldn't say anybody yet. I have been teasing this right now on different podcasts, but I can say the name to you, which is Chance Wolfe, who Rob Liefeld right now, he's doing his final run with Deadpool. Chance Wolfe right now is helping ink that. I've landed this man to do a cover for me. So he's doing a cover of Dunnanini, and I'm really excited. I can't tell anybody. I feel like I'm going to explode if I don't tell anybody else, but you're safe there. This isn't live yet. So
We got a
I'm just,
while.
I'm very excited to see what he has. By the time this is out, it should be done and even colored. I'm just beside myself that
That's
he agreed.
crazy.
And it's going to be awesome. Like I can't even fathom what he's going to bring to this. So it's going to be a good time.
Wow, that's super cool. That blows my mind. I love him. Like, I love Image. Like, there's some of my, like, them and like Valiant. Just I have so many of their products. I have so many of, issues I can think of right now, not just the graphic novels itself, but individual issues that he's worked on. So that's super cool. That's really awesome.
One of the things that really I'm sure you've heard the song My Hero by Foo Fighters.
Oh
In the
yeah,
lyrics,
yeah,
it says, "There goes my hero, he's ordinary." And I'm not saying any of this talent is my hero, but what I am getting at is when you do put somebody up for something they've done, in this case their talent, you start thinking of them unintentionally as extra human, extraordinary,
yeah. Yeah.
extraordinary. Like there's a lot of cool things, but at the end of the day, any of these individuals I've spoken to, they're human. They speak to me like I am a human, like them, like I am their equal. And it's really cool to see the personality behind the talent that has made all of these cool pieces of work.
No, I totally agree. It's funny, like I had a few people that were like bigger, like names for traditional publishing, and I was like, I've talked to them a lot on Facebook or Twitter, and I was like, I just really want to get them on, it's like I've read their books, and I was like, I have so many indie people, or people that have asked me to do interviews. So it's like I always save, some time, to pick people, like your project that I really want, to talk to people about. So I was like, man, I'm just gonna ask them. And some people were like, yeah, I can do that. Some people were like, oh, maybe in the future. Some people were like, that's not my thing. But the amount of people that were like, yeah, and some of the people that I have that I'm like, are they my friends? Like, are they really coming on for your podcast? He's one of my best friends. I was like, yes, they are, buddy. It was just like super cool. So I definitely agree with it. I think sometimes it's hard, right? Because whether you idolize them or like, I like can't even imagine if I ever got to talk to Alex Ross. I wouldn't even know. I would fangirl so hard, like I wouldn't even know. That would be one where I wouldn't be able to say stuff like Kevin Hearn. Like I met Brandon Sanderson, I met Patrick Rothfuss, but like they were just coming out and stuff, and I was like, oh cool. But like Kevin Hearn, I was like, oh my God, Iron Drew Chronicles. Like you're making me off your books, write urban fantasy because of your characters. I love them so much, and got me into the whole genre. And, I went through, I was like, met him, all them at one thing. I met Michael J. Sullivan, met Pierce Brown. But it was like, for me, it was like Kevin Hearn. I was just like, it was like one of those moments, and when I was like, oh, hello, my tongue wouldn't work. So I totally get you. But by the end, I went through the same show like three or four times. By the end, like everybody was done. I was there till like 9:45 at night, like 8:30 in the morning, 9:45 at night. And I was just like chit-chatting with him. He gave me him and his wife had just given, I was teaching English. They gave me like the $200 credit or whatever that they had at a local store. They came down from Denver before they like moved to Canada, and they're like, yeah, you can have this for your kids. You teach English. I'm like, I could get a lot of books for my kids like this. I was like, it just goes to show you, right, that they're just ordinary people. But to me, it's like that makes them even more extraordinary, right? When they act, really cool. Because I have met quite a few people, like UFC fighters, that were cool, and met some that weren't so cool. So I always tell people that adage, right? Don't meet your heroes. I said, well, now I've said that for a while. Then I met other people that were cool. I'm like, maybe just pick different heroes, I guess is, what I was thinking.
That's a good way of putting it. I've never thought of it like that. But if you meet the real them and it's not a pleasant experience, well, you got to meet the actual person. So yeah, pick different heroes. I get that. I like that. That's a good way of putting it.
And now that's my thing, right? I got different people I look up to, and I've approached them, and like Richard Lee Byers for me, Forgotten Realms, you know, like, he came on my podcast. He was just the nicest freaking guy. And a while back, he's like, man, I can't wait to come back. I'm like, I promise you, I will. I was like, any point you want to chat, you know, I was like, I got to get him on again soon. He's like, I'll try and get Elaine Cunningham and some of the other, you know, FR peeps. I was like, oh my God, dude. He's like, maybe one of these days we can get Ed or something. I was like, you know, like this guy was just so flipping cool. I talked to him all the time on Facebook. I, you know, send him some stuff privately, whatever. I'm like, dude, I just read another one of your books. I absolutely loved it, you know, or, you know, ask him for advice or something. And Paul S. Kemp, actually, Forgotten Realms author, saved me from years ago from getting scammed back when
Oh,
indie was still a thing.
interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's always interesting, right? So I just think that, you know, your example, a couple of them, you know, it's just a great way that if you really want to do something professionally with somebody, I always meet people. I'm like, I ask them, you know, like you never know. Because if you hadn't asked these people,
If you,
you wouldn't have something really cool to show, you know, in terms of
that's
like
the
the
old
art and
Michael
stuff.
Jordan saying, he said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't
Yeah.
take, right?
Yep.
And
Yep.
there's nothing wrong with a no, at least you now know, but you might get a yes. That's how I got all of all of the people that I've worked with for this story. I just asked, and to my surprise, they said yes. It was as simple as
Yeah, yeah.
that.
Yep. No, totally. I think that's just a great lesson and, you know, example for our audience to learn. So, but what should other writers know before joining a team and writing a comic? What's like kind of like your leaving advice for us on that?
Well, at the end of the day, if it's not your story and you're paid to write, that one I can't relate, but my suggestion would be understand you're part of a team.
That's a good
And
one.
if you're not in charge, but you're hired to write, well, there's going to be creative constraints right within those constraints and be overly happy to take any amendments and just say, you know what, you want that change? Sounds great. I'm going to make it awesome. And then you're going to like that change because I'll bring my A game to it. And that's how you move forward. That's how you get more jobs and more opportunities that way. You don't, I'm not saying be a doormat, but you are, since you're working with a team, what can you do to contribute to the team as opposed to make yourself stand out?
No, I think that's actually amazing advice. That's talked to quite a few, you know, comics people, you know, on different teams. My friend Alan Silverwood, his pet name, like he was my first person that I interviewed for this podcast. You know, and he worked for Marvel, a bunch of different people. And yeah, that's what one thing that he said from day one. So I think that that's we're almost 4 years later. So I think that's same thing, right? I think that's absolutely great advice for particularly, you know, for people that are trying to, you know, like I always have writers who are like, I want to write comics. I'm like, okay, cool, but can you work as a team? You know, and I think a lot of people don't even want to be a co-author, right? Like, I'm hoping by next year I have a couple things and then I'm ready to do, you know, a series as a co-author. So I'm also prepping myself, you know, for that type of relationship. So I think prepping yourself for a team, whether it's a pair or like you said, more people, I think that makes total sense, but particularly in this industry. So I always like to, you know, point those kind of things out for people because I don't think a lot of people know if you haven't been in the industry. But I definitely agree with you. It's definitely a team aspect. Like that's great advice.
And the other one is if you're writing for yourself, don't submit your story for review or editing until you're finished the first draft. And the reason I say that is if you're halfway through the story and you get somebody else's opinion, they might be suggesting edits to steer the story in a way you're not intending to. So I think it's very important for them to see the start and the finish to the story so they know how to edit within a path that goes towards your end goal. That would be my hard suggestion for writing your own stuff.
That's a really good one. I had somebody the other day who was telling me they were doing that for their like novel. I'm like, you're just sending out individual chapters. I was like, even if it's just a copy, I was like, seems like people would still give you just some overall advice or, you know, or whatever, particularly developmental edits. I was like, why would you be sending it out if you don't have the whole thing done? To me, that's just really strange because you don't get to see, I totally agree, you don't get to see the whole arc. So I've definitely been cautioning people privately about that recently too. It was something I never thought I would hear, you know, from somebody who's doing a novel in particular. So I thought that was very interesting. So I think that's just great advice, you know, for writing period, and producing a really good product. I know
My,
we're, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, my late father, he had this saying that if you're going to shingle your house and you tell 40 people, suddenly you're talking to 40 roofers. Wait
Oh.
till this time of the year. Don't use those shingles, use this one. And they all like bombard you with opinions. At the end of the day, if you finish shingling your roof and you show people, the minor details aren't going to matter. And they're going to be like, hey, that's great. Good job. Good for you. But if you give play-by-plays on all of your projects all the time, sometimes a lot of the advice is conflicting and it slows you down and it can actually destroy your creative process.
No, I think that is very, very valuable advice and very true. I had a couple people ask me like, where's your, where's your next draft? Or like, can we see the in-between between 4 and 5? I'm like, nope. I'm like, I have a lot of things I've thrown out. I have a lot of things that aren't working. A character yesterday told me, actually, he saved my life. I didn't save his life. I'm like, great, that's a rewrite for the whole first chapter I just rewrote. So I can only imagine if somebody came in and tried to talk to me and my like 14 characters right now that can't make up their mind on the final process, So I totally agree. Too many hands in the kitchen, right? So I think that's great advice. I just want to make sure we have enough time to wrap up here time-wise, just for you to tell us, do you have any news updates, current projects, anything like that you can share with us? Obviously, issue 2's on the way if you want to just throw that date again, just in case people are joining
Yeah,
us
for
late.
sure. So, as of basically go to the link, look up Madcaps, the Madcaps issue number 2. The launch time is the plan right now as of November 2024 when this is being filmed. The plan is the start of April, so I'm pretty sure that's not going to be changing. The breakdown of this whole book, the first issue is the four friends just figuring out that, hey, we help these guards stave off this undead outbreak. Sarlacc, who exam he's examining the bodies because he's used to, as I've said before, pat tracking down and studying things that go bump in the night. He's like, this one individual doesn't have any bite marks on him. And I remember him from earlier. He was one of the junkies I turned away, and they're able to intercept a drug shipment. And from here, they're going to start going into enemy territory for issue 2. One of the things about anybody that's crazy enough to either manufacture or distribute or store drugs, I shouldn't say drugs, I should say illegal substances, we'll put it that way. This is not a don't do drugs book. This isn't like 1980, 1990 arcade games, blue screen, American logo, winners don't use drugs. Anybody from that era knows what I'm talking about. But anyways,
Sergeant Slaughter comes in.
But if you're going to step on a home turf of somebody doing something illegal, they're probably going to have, be well guarded. And that's pretty much all I can say to this second issue. I've said this in a couple of other podcasts already, but as they say in volleyball, bump, set, and spike. Issue 3 spikes and spikes hard. So issue 1 is the setup. Issue 2 is them figuring out what the heck is actually going on. Issue number 3 is no pulled punches, and we'll see if these guys survive. And that's all I have to say about it. If you want to find me on Facebook, I'm known as DM Ray, DM short for Dungeon Master. You can find me on what's known as the controversial, I call it Twixter. You
That's
can
awesome.
find me as Raymond the DM. DM Ray was taken. You can find me on Instagram under the same alias. And I think that's all I have. Oh, also, there's the Madcaps Facebook page. But of all of it, find that Kickstarter pre-launch page, Kickstart Madcaps issue number 2, and hit follow. You're going to be helping me out, and you're going to know the minute it drops. And I am going to be relieved when I can finally start openly talking about this story when it's done.
Well, that's awesome. You guys don't have to do too much work. All you have to do is go down to the description to find all of Ray's social links. Kickstarter links will be there. So all you guys have to do is go down and just click it. That's all you got to do.
Down there.
And then check it out. Yeah. Once you get there, your finger will do the follow and all those things. Your brain won't even have to do it after you see the amazing work that these guys have done. As soon as your eyes hit that cover, you'll be like, oh, done. And if you don't buy comics that way, I don't know if this is the right place for you. I just know what I like, I guess, by now. I've been buying comics for too long. Same with books now. But make sure you guys do that. Want to make sure this is such a great time to reiterate that whether you are, oh hey, you found this interview, like, oh, I want to review this comic. And the I love when people get the Kickstarters right, the Kickstarters we love tag, anything like that that you guys can do to help Ray, but also his team, which he's mentioned quite a few times on here. We want to make sure we're reviewing any products, because whether it's a comic, graphic novel, we got people on here that have a very large team, directors and things like that, all the people that put the sets and stuff together. We want to make sure we're helping anybody, whether it's the author, artist, writer, voice, actor, editor, all those things. Doing those reviews, those likes, those follows, those kind of things, particularly on Kickstarter, really helps everybody out with those projects. So we really want to make sure you guys are doing that just to help out our authors and creatives. Ray, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so glad we could get this in for you. I can feel the storm literally coming in behind me, because all of a sudden all my windows in my office are really cold. But I'm glad we could have this chat. I learned a lot. I'm really excited. I'm actually going to go back and read issue one again before doing my review, just because you mentioned some things. I'm like, oh, I didn't pick that up before. So I'm going to go back and check that out again. Make sure you guys check that out. That'll also be in the description here. But Ray, if there's anything else I can do for you, please send it my way.
Appreciate
Awesome
it. Thank
project.
you.
Really excited to get
Thanks,
in.
man.
Yeah, I'm excited to get in for the physical copies and things like that, for issue two, and some of the ones for whatever you guys got for issue one as well. So I'm definitely gonna be following that. But if there's anything else I can do in the meantime, you just hit me up on Facebook or social media and we'll get it done for you, my friend. But other than that, good luck,
Right on.
with
Appreciate
Kickstarter
it.
for issue two.
Right on, man. Thank you.
Yep. You have a good rest of the day, my friend, and I'll talk to you soon. See you later.